You could stand there quietly.
It's okay. Okay, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Yisai. We are in Shara B'Tochen. Perek, hey. In my Leiv Tov edition, it's page Shin Samach Vav. Page Shin Samach Vav. We're in the middle of discussing the differences between a person with bitachon and a person without bitachon when it comes to parnasa. Again, they're both doing hishtadlus. Chavos Avavos makes that very clear. Bitachon, hishtadlus is a part of bitachon, going about it in the right way. But what will the differences be then? So, to recap, number one was that whereas they're both doing the same ishtadlus toward their parnasa, the person with bitachon will be comfortable and accepting of any outcome. Whereas the person without bitachon wants only the parnasa outcome and will not accept something that, if it turns out otherwise, or compromised. Number two, the person with bitachon does the ishtadlus calmly and serenely without stress. He's not emotionally involved. Whereas the person without bitachon is very tense and stressed, having to see, he must see that the bitachon, that the ishtadlus is going to bear the fruits that he's hoping for. Number three, and this is what we were in the middle with yesterday. The person with bitachon will not attribute the success or the lack of it to the form of ishtadlus that he chose, that he engaged in. He sees the ishtadlus is going through emotion, and in addition, fulfilling Hashem's will, cooperating with Hashem's will, contributing to the functioning world that Hashem wants. And if Hashem provides him with parnasa through that means, he's happy, he thanks Hashem. But otherwise, he understands that he leaves it up to Hashem what the outcome should be. He continues going about his ishtadlus with a good attitude either way. Whereas the person without bitachon, when he does his ishtadlus, he's completely leaning on it. He's emotionally leaning on that ishtadlus. He sees that as the cause of his success or lack of it. If he succeeds, he says, wow, this was a great job to engage in. And if he doesn't, so once again, he will see it as this job was a failure, rather than understand that, no, he did what he needed to do by doing this job. He went through the motions. And now, what Hashem decides is what Hashem decides. What? Okay. Now we move on to the next difference. Harvi. Number four. Kabbitach melekim. When a person operates with bitachon, I'm sorry, just one moment. Sorry. Okay. When a person operates with bitachon, when he has extra, when Hashem provided him with more than he needs, he'll easily spend it on matters of Hashem's will, with a good attitude, with a generous, magnanimous, and good attitude. Like the Pasuk says, everything I have is from you. So anything I give back to you, you tell Hashem, is being given to you from your own hand. However, a person who lacks the proper bitachon, he can be given 10 million, but he still won't see it as extra because he never knows when I'll need it. He is too caring about his money and too concerned about making sure that, you know, he'll always have anything that might come up, to be able to fulfill his duties to Hashem and his duties to people. In other words, what he's saying is like this. Another very important aspect of bitachon continues after you've actually made the money, after you've earned that parnasa. If it's a person understands that just as Hashem, I was in Hashem's hands this month, I'm going to be in Hashem's hands next month, and the month after, and the month after. I don't see it as up to me to ensure my financial security for the long term. Now, saving, being responsible about the future is part of ishtadlus. But it comes back to a discussion that we had earlier in the Chovos HaLevavos. When there is some matter of Ratzon Hashem that demands money, what's going to happen now? The person with bitachon will have an easier time parting with his money in order to do the Ratzon Hashem. Meaning, let's say some tzedakah comes up, which really morally obligates you, be it just the issue of giving maestros as a Jew is expected to do. Or let's say, you know, you have a just to give an extreme example. You know the story of the Kapishnitzer Rebbe. The Kapishnitzer Rebbe in America. He one time appeared at the office of a very wealthy Hasidic Jew. He's a very, very wealthy man. His secretary walks in one day and says, there's a Jew who would like to meet you. He didn't have any appointments. He asked, who is the person? She went out to ask who the person is. She came back and she said, he's the Rebbe of Kapishnitz. Kapishnitz Rebbe. The Hasid was awestruck. He said, certainly let him in. The Rebbe came in. He received him with a lot of honor and deference. And yes, well, why did I merit the honor of the Rebbe coming to visit me in my office? And the Rebbe told him, you know that I'm involved in various tzedakas. I just became aware of a family that's in very dire straits. And he basically described not one of these particularly horrifying stories, but a story about a large family where the parents were having a very hard time making ends meet. And they were really, really struggling. He was really very tight and he had unpaid bills and his landlord was threatening to throw him out. And the more typical sad story of a family struggling. But it was a family who was really struggling. It was very hard for them. And they really were feeling like they were floundering and they had nowhere to get some support from. And the Kapishnitzer Rebbe said, I decided I got to get involved in helping this family. And I'd like you to help me. So the person just pulled out his checkbook. He said, you say the sum. I'll give whatever it is. So the Rebbe said, I need right now for this family, I need X amount. I spelled out the amount. The man wrote it out in a flourish without hesitation. And then he said to the Rebbe, who should I make the check out to? And the Rebbe stared at him for a minute and he said, write your brother's name on the check. It was this man's brother. The man was dumbfounded and obviously a bit mortified. But what actually happened? What actually happened here? Was he completely oblivious to his brother's plight? The Kapishnitzer Rebbe was trying to make a point. Apparently he knew, but he said, okay, you know, my brother should, stop nudging me already. Yes, I have more money and, let him just take care of himself. And sometimes there are situations where there's a very clear moral demand on the person. There's a very clear moral demand on the person. But nevertheless, the person can feel like, look, I have to put myself first. Now, I know that I have enough money for this month. I know that I have enough money for the next year. But who? And I also know that I have a job now that can keep providing for me. But who knows when I'll need it? Who knows when I'll need it? And therefore, even though I do understand, really, this is something I should be doing with this money. But since I never know when I'll need it, I have to hold on to this money as a security. This is what the Chovos HaLevavos is talking about. He says this is where there will be a difference between the person with bitachon and the person without. The Chovos HaLevavos did not say that if you have exactly enough of your panasa, the Baal Bitachon will give it up in order to support somebody else. He didn't say that. No. If you have what you need to feed your family, it's a whole different story, the discussion of should you give that up for somebody else. He is talking Bitachon here. You have what you need. Just what? Who knows if I'll always continue to have what I need. And therefore, I have to care for myself now. This is where he's saying that, no, the person with Bitachon will say, Hashem wants something from me now. My concern is about the future. My future is in Hashem's hands. Now, if Hashem wants this from me, I'm going to give it to him. Now, I'm not getting into when do you determine that Hashem wants something from you, but sometimes it's clear. Sometimes it's issues of clear halacha. I had somebody once told me that basically the question was before Sukkot. And he said to me, he doesn't want to spend money on schach. He doesn't want to spend money on schach because they're moving after Sukkot. Now, we're not talking about a very big sukkah here. I just want to stress. We're not talking about one of these sukkahs that it would take who knows how many meters of schach to cover. But if I had to get, you know, one pretty average-sized mat, how much do those cost again? I don't know. 200-300 shekel. He said, they're moving after Sukkot, and it's very likely that the porch in the next apartment will be of a different configuration, whatever it is. And why should he spend the money on something he's probably not going to be able to use it next time anyways? So this year, they'll eat in the house. This year, they'll eat in the house. So I said to him, you know what? I hear the line of reasoning. We should say that on Pesach also. Matzahs basically cost the same amount for a family. Why should you spend money on matzahs that you're not going to be able to use next year anyways? Just what? You understand that spending these 200-300 shekel is part of what Hashem wants from you. Sometimes the Ratzon Hashem involves spending money. So here once again, a person without bitachon says, how can I let go of this money? I might need it in a half a year. The person with bitachon will have an easier time parting with the money. Again, coming from the knowledge, this is not about being generous. It's about coming from the knowledge that Hashem is caring for me, and therefore now I can afford, if I have that extra money and Hashem wants me to use it for something, I can just comfortably and easily let go of it. And he says, Ve'inenu margish boy. So what ends up happening is that this person holds on to it until he ends up losing it in some other way. He makes a bad investment. The money ends up gone anyways. And instead of having gained those mitzvahs, he just ended up losing it anyhow. So that is difference number four. Difference number four is the attitude toward money. Is the attitude toward money, again, that panicky attitude of, I better hold on to anything and get my hands on because who knows when I'll need it? Or is the attitude that Hashem provided me with this, He will continue to provide me what I should have. If right now it's responsible to spend this money, again, I'm factoring that in. We're not talking about, He's not telling you give up all your money. If right now I have extra, right now it makes sense to spend this money. Just the question is, what's going to be in the future? So this is where Bitachon will, the Baal Bitachon will spend the money, the person who lacks Bitachon won't. Hachamishi, what's number five? Ki abiteach beilokim whom is asik b'sibo yisoilam. A person with Bitachon is engaging in two layers of ishtadlus. He's doing ishtadlus for his immediate material affairs, but he's also doing making material efforts toward lahachin tzedo la'achrisa v'sipo glabeis mayadoi. He is also putting material efforts into preparing his state of affairs for the afterlife, for after 120. U'mashi yisbar loy boy hatzolas teirosoi v'oilamoi. And therefore, when he is engaging, meaning he is constantly conscious of the fact that my material efforts have to be aimed at two goals at the same time. They have to get me to Olam Hazeh, they have to be responsible efforts toward Olam Hazeh, Ishtadlus, and they also have to be in tandem with my Olam Haba efforts. The two can be merged very successfully. We already discussed how working for a living is not outside of the spiritual agenda. It's just an issue of mindset and mentality. If you're working for a living because you need money, so you are working for a living the same way all the rest of the world is working for a living. And where is your spirituality? It's in your davening. It's in the learning that you do after work. But if you're working because this is part of Hashem's expectation of you, and you're doing it with the consciousness and with the intent of, this is what Hashem wants from me, I want to cooperate with Hashem's will, be it as we discussed earlier from the Chavis Alvavitz, just yesterday, that Hashem wants you to contribute to a functioning world, be it because I am supporting a family of from Jews, who also happen to be my wife and children, and therefore I'm putting work into that, etc., then a person is working toward Olam HaZeh and Olam HaBa in tandem. But the Baal Bitachon remains very conscious of the fact that I cannot allow my material efforts to move me away, to conflict with my spiritual efforts. Therefore what? He has to make sure that any ishtadlis that he does is in line with my spiritual program too. It's not going to get me further from Olam HaBa. It's not going to conflict with my Olam HaBa agenda. If the only means of ishtadlus that he has available is something, or one of the choices of ishtadlus that he has available is something that will take him down spiritually, or actually goes against Hashem's will, he won't engage in it, even if it seems lucrative, even if it seems profitable. Again, the person without bitachon is panicky. If I don't take whatever means I can to bring in that money, I'm going to be in trouble. And therefore, he can't afford not to grasp at any lifeline. But the person with bitachon says, no, again, I'm doing ishtadlus because Hashem expects it of me. Where this is clearly something that Hashem does not expect of me, or that Hashem expects me not to do, it's not kosher ishtadlus. It's not kosher ishtadlus, A, because it's against the halacha, but also because this is not the ishtadlus that Hashem intended me to do. So, okay, we should give a number of examples of this, but we'll do that as a Hashem bli neder tomorrow. We'll end here for tonight.
Thank you very much.